Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Howard Thurston, and this is Christopher Mookie-Gon Harrington. How you doing, Mookie? You ready to talk about Hulk Hogan, WQ2, MSG show? What's going on with Sinclair? In the time between, we just got finished recording WrestleNomics Premium, and now we're doing the free WrestleNomics Radio. You haven't been drinking and tweeting during that time, have you?
No, I'm looking at I have one of those next door neighborhood groups that sends emails out, and so I was looking at the latest one for where I live, and it says someone just stole the catalytic converter off my car.
Wow!
Yesterday at 4 p.m. I thought that's a different one than usual. So
you have like a neighborhood watch Facebook group?
Well, it's more like a neighborhood complaint Facebook group. I don't feel like they watch very much. They just complain about what happens when they see it later.
Yeah. Well, watch, just like, you know, watch WWE, complain about WWE. What's the difference?
Let's talk some of the big news. On our premium show this week, we're going to talk a ton about WWE Q2 results on Thursday. We talked about the state of WWE popularity on the premium show. Mm-hmm. We talked about lots of other random data, including the Pollstar data I came across this week.
Yeah.
But that's over at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, $5 a month, and you get access to the notes, the shows, and you'll even get access to the video discussion we'll have on Thursday, so that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, but as far as the episode we just recorded, I think we had a pretty interesting conversation about, has WWE's popularity actually decreased? To what extent? And we looked at TV viewership, Google searches, North American live attendance.
Numbers!
Real numbers, real data, multiple metrics. This isn't some one metric show where we just talk about one metric and decry the decline of the business, but we look at multiple metrics and try to
we also did a who's the biggest draws in WWE?
Who's
and I
the
think number
draw?
Two will shock everyone.
Is it Jinder Mahal? Is Jinder Mahal a draw? Is Roman Reigns a draw? Who's a draw?
Gotta pay the $5 to find out.
Okay. Then you pay the $5, you go on, you listen to the show, you go on Twitter, you declare your favorite wrestler's a draw, you quote tweet people, put them in the pillory. That's what this is all about, I think, here, isn't it?
Something like that. A lot of quote tweeting going on this week as people retweeting the statements from Titus O'Neil and the statement from The New Day, courtesy of Kofi Kingston, and to a lesser degree, Mark Henry's quotes to TMZ, all of them on the subject of Hulk Hogan returning to the WWE, meeting with the whole locker room in Pittsburgh, a mandatory meeting for the talent to show up and hear Hulk Hogan talk to the group. Mm-hmm. And it's been a controversial decision for sure, especially as people point out, the same week that
do we have a visitor? Do we have a guest on this episode of WrestleNomics Radio?
My dog is very excited. Everything okay?
Yeah, she. Do you see how much better she is?
What, did you shave her?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. My dog got shaved.
Oh,
she's happy.
Oh my goodness,
she's shaved.
She's very happy, great. But she very much was like, I must go. Show Chris that I am better.
Yeah, she had to go see me. Sorry about
very
nice. That.
Oh, no, very good. Does she have any thoughts about Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, she doesn't have many thoughts on Hulk Hogan, though she is a black dog. Mm. So I don't know if that sounds right or not. But yeah, the same week that Papa John's founder got himself booted from his own company formally for the comments he made, Hulk Hogan being re-put back into the fold with WWE. And all I can say on this is that I think all the wrestlers are completely entitled to their own opinions on this matter. And there's absolutely no reason that any of them should feel an obligation to, quote unquote, accept what Hulk Hogan is saying just because the company is saying, hey, they want to do business with him. I think, moreover, as a lot of them have pointed out, Hogan seems to be more upset that he was caught and broadcast saying the things he did rather than the fact that he understands they were wrong to say and that those were his, you know, kind of those were the sort of things that he was willing to say to other people about African-Americans and his daughter's boyfriend at the time and lots of other people. So I don't know if I have that much sympathy for Hulk Hogan in this situation. I think everyone has the right to be disappointed, angry, or just to basically call him out as a two-faced coward at times.
Yeah,
as someone who you know is a worker, and so he'll say whatever he needs to be said to make the business go on. And he's always thought that he can just kind of get away by saying, "Oh, I didn't really mean that," or "Oh, that's just that's just one element." But
yeah, Hulk Hogan. Well, let's go through the things that people from WWE said about this. So it's just Mark Henry said it. He told TMZ it's 50-50 in terms of the locker room support for this, for Hulk Hogan coming back. I've talked to guys there who were like, man, the hell with him. And by the way, I don't know if we've set it up. There was a locker room meeting. Did you say that already? There's a locker room meeting in Pittsburgh at the pay-per-view, the Extreme Rules pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah, where, and it was mandatory. Everyone had to go.
Everyone, whether you booked on the pay-per-view or not. So Titus O'Neil was there. Titus O'Neil did not appear on this pay-per-view. But Titus O'Neil and others who are not appearing on the pay-per-view were flown to Pittsburgh to be there for this meeting. Just for Hulk Hogan to, I guess, I mean, nobody, obviously this thing wasn't recorded, but Hulk Hogan spoke to the WWE locker room and said whatever it was that he said.
I think it was actually, I thought that Dave said something about it might actually be recorded for like part of like a comeback.
Oh my goodness.
Video or something at some point. Though I wouldn't be surprised if now they're double thinking that, now that they realize that, no, it's not just everyone coming up and shaking his hand and giving him a hug and saying, so glad to have you back, Hulkster.
Yeah. I've got the entire Kofi Kingston statement here. It's quite lengthy.
Yeah, and I don't know if we need to go through it all, because I think people should go and read it themselves and see what he had to say. But I think everything he had to say was honest, was valid, and it really sets a line to say there's a big difference between what the company wants to do and what they can make wrestlers feel. And a lot of these wrestlers did not feel that there was true contrition, that there was a commitment to bettering society around him, or that there was an understanding of just how damaging and disappointing those actions were. And at another level, I think some people are just disappointed that, you know, people get put on pedestals in the first place. Mm-hmm. And that there's this vision that, you know, somehow there's an atonement that is due to someone just because they were very successful in this business. Like Kofi says in his thing there, which I thought was well done, where he says, there's no doubt that Hulk Hogan is a professional wrestler Hall of Famer. He is one of the most important people in the history of professional wrestling. But that doesn't mean he can't be a terrible human in the way that he acts in certain fashions.
Mm-hmm. But Kofi didn't say – he didn't say terrible human, right?
No. I'm just saying I'm editorializing.
Yeah. He says – so I'll read this part at least. How do we feel? Indifferent. We are not happy or sad, angry or resentful. Who WWE puts in its Hall of Fame is totally and completely up to the company. And from a career standpoint, there's no argument on whether or not Hogan should have his place that is in the Hall of Fame. We have no problem with his reinduction in the slightest degree. It is impossible to even begin to mention the history and evolution of the business without mentioning his name. On a personal level, when someone makes a racist and hateful comments about any race or group of people, especially the degree that Hogan made about our people, we find it difficult to simply forget, regardless of how long ago it was or the situation in which those comments were made. There's quite a bit more to it than that, and you can find that.
But I think that really hits at the heart of it, which is they're saying maybe he's not even apologizing for his comments as much as he's being apologizing for getting caught saying them.
Yeah,
and the fact that it doesn't saying I'm sorry doesn't in fact make it then okay. Doesn't in fact make you then just ignore the way that person acted, because especially because I think they would strongly believe, like many others, that actions speak a lot louder than words, and his words, you know, really damned him mm-hmm. to being shown for what he was willing to say behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm. And Titus O'Neil also did, like, this is like the iPhone note. Statement, just like Kofi Kingston did. He made his own statement here saying, unfortunately, I must echo the sentiment and dissatisfaction expressed by many of my fellow contemporaries concerning Mr. Bollea's apology and its lack of true contrition, remorse, and desire to change. Mr. Bollea's apology that, quote, that he didn't know he was being recorded, end quote, is not remorse for the hateful and violent utterances he made, which reprise language that has caused violence against blacks and minorities for centuries.
Yeah, and what even shocked me more is that, you know, Titus said something like not shocked me about what he said. What shocked me is that, like, Titus said something like, I care a lot about being a good role model to the young black men in my life, like my sons. Mm-hmm. And I would see people write back and be like, why aren't you trying to be a good role model to all young people? And I was just like, it's unfathomable. As a white American, just the level of scrutiny and just faux outrage that people will cast upon these very honest statements people are putting putting out about this, mm-hmm. is that they're putting themselves in the position of having to be criticized by speaking out on this. And the fact that people would then try to nitpick them and say, well, this is your explanation is insufficient to me for this reason, is just disgusting. Because I think Hulk Hogan does deserve to apologize to these people who, directly are being affected by the way that he acts as a representation of the industry. And, I'm Open Mike Eagle is a rapper. He's a wrestling fan. He's a musician. He's a really talented guy. And I remember to Kofi, he responded, "Y'all are way better than me. I hella hate that dude." And to Titus O'Neil, he responded, let me just find his response here. It's kind of funny because he showed up very high on both people's tweets. I might have to pull up actually Open Mike Eagle's direct Twitter account. But he responded something very closer to Titus, basically saying, this is, as a wrestling fan, as a black man, as a lot of other things, I feel a lot more in line with the way Titus is responding here. Let's see if I can find his comment.
Titus also addressed, I guess there were some rumors or something like that I hadn't heard, but that he supposedly refused to shake Hogan's hand. He said in the statement that there was no, situation where he could have shook Hogan's hand, that didn't happen, he said.
I take it back. I mean, I don't take it back. Open Mike Eagle just said, "Shout out to using your whole battery to write this out," and gave like a black fist bump. But
yes. I'm Titus O'Neil's battery on his iPhone, very close. It's in the red.
It is. But it's one of those things where he has a podcast. I think it's called Tights and Fights, and he talks about stuff a lot. And they did a whole show about this, and so I would recommend talking to someone, who has a very different experience than you to understand, why does something like this matter? I think there's a lot of white men talking about why Hulk Hogan's comments aren't that bad or why he should be forgiven immediately, and not really taking into account the viewpoint of so many other people who are going to be so negatively affected by the reputation he causes, to the esteem that they're being held in, and the enormous heavy history of African Americans in professional wrestling with the way they've been treated for so many years.
Yeah, I mean, like, personally, my opinion, I have no desire to see Hulk Hogan in any entertainment capacity like ever again, especially when you hear things like this where it sounds like his idea of apologizing and repairing the thing includes statements like he didn't know he was being recorded, as if the problem was that he got caught, not the problem was that he said those things or feels that way.
Yeah. So I have a lot of respect for the wrestlers, and I think it's a good example of where in wrestling, there's a lot of times wrestlers are kind of asked to just go with the flow and not comment on the way that a company is acting. And I'm glad to see these people being put in a position where they feel confident enough to do this. And at the same time, I don't think everyone has to, because I can understand that a lot of people don't want to be the one that has to have the spotlight on them, and then they say, "What do you think about this? How do you feel about this?" When it's not them who did something wrong, mm-hmm. it's not them who that owes apologies to the rest of the locker room and to these people. Individually, to say, this is the low esteem that I was holding you in, and these are the kind of racist thoughts and toxic culture that I was willing to maintain in my life.
Mm-hmm. And the N-word that he uses toward, I guess, the boyfriend at the time of his daughter Brooke, it's not like I don't like him because he does things that I don't like, or he doesn't treat her well, or something like that. He just it's for. According to what he says in those statements, which are recorded and, were published by Gawker, it's for no other reason than he's black that he uses those statements. And he goes on to say, I'm a racist. He says everybody's a little bit racist. So it's not as if like, oh, that was taken out of context. No, you said you were a racist.
Yeah. And in fact, a lot of people have been reprinting the full statement. And probably the thing I hear the most is, wow, I didn't realize that's what he said. Mm-hmm. Is I think a lot of people thought it was a much more casual thing where he was almost like a rap lyric type thing, and it's like, no, this is very much different. Like, if you posted this on Twitter, it would probably be flagged as hate speech.
Yeah,
it's pretty serious. So
yeah, so I think the whole thing is just it's not a surprise, but it's another reminder of like who Hulk Hogan is and who WWE is, and that I think Hulk Hogan has historically been somebody who's mostly about himself. I'm sure he does charity things and he does nice people for he does nice things for people, but you know, he's about himself and about getting himself over as a business, not so much, you know, helping others out and making sure that others get put over and have success in the business. He's about taking care of Hogan. And I think it's sort of character revealing about WWE, or maybe not revealing, but reminding of WWE that, you know, this is how seriously they take that issue, and they take social issues and they take issues of race and things like that.
You know, what bugs me is people try to paint it as a generational gap. And I would still say it's a decency gap,
right,
is what it really is that it doesn't have to do with the fact that someone was born in the 50s or the 60s and this is what they said.
But he grew up young. In the American South.
Yeah. And so it's ridiculous to me when people paint it. And I've even seen Dave use this argument to say, well, look at Big E. Big E is this old. And so on this year, he would have thought of Hogan in this way when he was 16. And I would just be like, no, I'm pretty sure that we can appreciate and understand who people are without having to constantly say, well, when I was 15 years old, this is what this person was like. Mm-hmm. I think we're capable of a thought that's more inquisitive and more detail-oriented than that. And that in a lot of times I feel like there's oftentimes this desire to say, well, I am a white male of a similar age of this person. Therefore, I have to give these excuses to give myself some comfort that I'm not actually taking accountability in my own life to understand how difficult and terrible these thoughts and actions are.
Yeah. And I guess, like, I don't know, in my own personal experience, you know, as a white guy growing up in the US, like I've grown up with a lot of people who have used words like that. And it doesn't mean like, oh yeah, it was okay then. It wasn't okay then. And if people use that word less now in private, well, that's a good thing. It's not just like a generational thing where, well, hey, that was okay back then because it was back then and it was in private. It's not. It wasn't okay then. It has the same connotations of hatred and violence then as it does now. It was just, maybe it was a more hateful, violent time then that you could more easily get away with it then. And yeah.
And everybody's going to have a different take on how much they want to read into someone else's life. And, you know, I think the thing is, a lot of wrestlers should have the choice not to have to associate with someone like that.
Yeah.
That is absolutely their prerogative, and they shouldn't be in a position where the company forces them to, you know, to laud and applaud people like that.
Yeah.
WWE Q2 preview coming up on Thursday. We're going to get some reporting from WWE. We're going to get what? What are the different files that show up when we do a WWE report?
We are going to get a press release at about 9 a.m. Eastern time.
What's in that press release?
A nice statement, maybe some quotes from Vince McMahon, from George Berrios. The press release, if I remember right, will have the quarterly report itself, the 8K. Not the quarterly report, but the 8K. What name do you call the 8K?
Technically, it's something like a material filing of an
event.
That's
right. Anytime something of material significance happens.
I guess it's results of operations and financial condition, and oftentimes the financial statement and exhibits, and item 2.02 and an item 9.01.
Yeah. So later in the day, we'll probably get the 10Q, the actual quarterly report, but we'll get very early in the day, we'll get an 8K. We'll get a press release. We'll get some stats. I'm sure we'll get a W Network subscriber update. I'm sure we'll get an outlook about what W expects to be making in revenue in the future, in the short-term future, what W expects to be reporting in OIBDA, a form of profit in the near future. We will be getting an updated version of the trending schedules, which is a breakdown by segments of business for WWE, just how each segment is doing compared to previous periods in recent history. We'll be getting an updated version of the key performance indicators, which is always the most fun document, I guess, that we get at least visually. Perhaps both of us will be screenshotting excerpts from the KPIs, which will have various graphs comparing everything from TV viewership for both Raw and SmackDown compared to the top 25 cable networks, compared to
the number of social media followers that they have for.
That's right.
for Twitter and Instagram to number of video hours on demand played and of course the attendance numbers, which is the one we really focus on because that's going to be able – from that you can suss out an estimate of the range of attendance that WrestleMania had because they give you a number and they say, oh, we averaged 5,600 people without WrestleMania and we averaged 6,000 people with WrestleMania. So you can say, oh, well, they got 400 incremental people between those two averages. And that's the difference of doing 80 shows or 79 shows. So that one show should be equal to, and you do the math and you can come out with a number. And then you say, well, but they round all the numbers to the nearest, you know, 100. So it could be up to this much higher or up to this much lower. And so you get these big ranges. And so on the patron show we just finished, we went through the Polestar numbers, which were coming from a music concert organization that gets some pretty detailed numbers for grosses and tickets sold. And we compared that with the numbers that WWE had reported for ranges. And then we compared that with what the WWE press releases said. And in general, the true numbers were about 8,000 to 9,000 people less than what the press release said. So for WrestleMania 2018, WWE reported a number of
.. 78,133. 78,000?
Yes. Yeah. So does Brandon Howard Thurston want to make a prediction on what the true WrestleMania number will be?
This was in New Orleans. So the real answer is like we're going to get a range that we're going to deduce, maybe, actually, because I don't really know what's going to happen this time, because this time, the attendance is going to, well, I guess there's North American, so maybe they're going to split this out on the international side as well. No one knows what I'm talking about right now. There's going to be...
Saudi Arabia. You're worried that Saudi Arabia might skew the international number.
Exactly. So we're going to get we'll get this slide in the KPIs that will have North American attendance averages by quarter, and then we'll have international attendances by quarter. So maybe the Greatest Royal Rumble will be split out of the international side and the WrestleMania number will be split out of the North American side. So we won't get an actual number on the attendance, the paid attendance for WrestleMania, but we will get most likely an average for Q2 with WrestleMania and without WrestleMania. And with that, I will pull out my subversive Excel spreadsheet and I will put the numbers into that Excel spreadsheet and what I'll get is a range of for what the paid attendance really is, and usually that range is pretty wide. It's like 10 to 15,000 wide.
So what do you think?
60,
going back to my question.
Yeah.
Was the median number, the middle number for your WrestleMania 34 prediction, if 78,133 is the reported number?
So let's see. WrestleMania 30 was also in New Orleans, and the range for that we got, and actually we got a tighter range than usual for WrestleMania 30 because I think we got some better data, to make a long story short. That was about 58,000 to 61,000, so I think it's going to be a tad higher. I'll say the median will be 61,000.
Oh, wow. That's a little lower than I thought. I was only going to say... I was going to say, I think they're going to have a true number around 68,000.
That high?
Yeah, just because historically their inflation has been about 8 to 9,000. So I'm just going to use their historical inflation number of about 8 to 9,000 and subtract that off the reported number.
So I think what I've got here, I've got a note in this spreadsheet. If we follow the trail here, the capacity of record refers to capacity listed on WWE internal calendar made public record via lawsuits. So I think what I'm referring to here is you got as a result of a lawsuit against bootlegging, you got a lot of data about just what the capacity was for some of WWE's venues. So one of those venues, I believe, was the Superdome, and I got a capacity of record of 66,528. So that would be so that capacity is lower than the number I think that you just predicted. You said 67 or 68,000, right? If I was listening, if I was paying.
Yeah, and if you go to the Wikipedia page for the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, they say that football they can fit 73 expandable to 76, and that WrestleMania magically got 78,000 somehow in there.
Right.
So it's just kind of funny where even football, it goes back to that argument that perhaps even NFL numbers are being somewhat. Expanded, but the truth is being stretched.
Yeah.
And so you're right, though. If the internal number was 69, 66.
Capacity of record, 66,524.
Well, then I would say that 66 number is a pretty good number because, yeah, you can get a little bit more in there, but I'll stick with my 68,000 prediction. I'll lower it, I guess, to 68,000 from 69,000. But yeah, it is a because they might have just like slammed the floor with as many seats as possible.
Yeah, and as far as like the Superdome goes in 2014, which is where WrestleMania 30 was, that WrestleMania was just short of a sellout, if I remember right. I think that's a report from the Observer. I'm sure someone could go back and check. So I think it was just short of a sellout, and it looks like the paid attendance for that WrestleMania was about 60,000. So I would guess this one was sold out, right? So I would guess this number is going to be a little higher. So that's why I guess I said 61. Maybe that's a little low. I could see it as high as like 63, maybe 64.
We'll find out on Thursday, but that's a good number for us to kind of have in our head.
I expect the range that we're going to get is going to be like 10,000 wide anyway.
Good point.
But we'll have a median.
We will, and it will probably be well below the 78,000 number that they're claiming right now.
Yeah.
So that will be interesting. All the Saudi stuff is going to be fascinating because they really owe an accounting of some sort for the Greatest Royal Rumble, yeah, for the value of the Saudi deal, for future Saudi deals, for whether this money is coming in as cash or as payments, whether or not they're getting live event gate, or does the live event gate go back to Saudi Arabia and that WWE just gets a lump sum for doing these shows.
Yeah. Because by any account, this was a huge amount of money that WWE was given from the Saudi government to do this show. So do they count that as a live gate? We'll probably – so the quarterly report will probably come out in like the afternoon, the evening at the latest. And we'll get some little notes when they go over each segment, and we may get some information in one of those notes.
But they got rid of the segment that told us geographically we make money here, 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 and here. And that would have been the segment that would have said, look at how much it went up in the Middle East over this time. Mm-hmm. But we won't get that anymore.
But there's still going to be a live event section of their quarterly report where they're going to explain why the changes are what they are.
Yes. And that will probably be the biggest driver, is that if they record that revenue. And the other part is that due to the way that they changed that bizarre accounting shift – not bizarre, but the actually very normal accounting shift that they did this year, where they changed how they say, if I have a long-term contract and I'm owed a bunch of money, how will I basically put that money on my balance sheet? And it was a whole discussion about basically saying, instead of taking it as a lump sum, you should take it in pieces. And because of that, things like the WWE royalties on video games and whatnot might change the way that they show up on the balance sheet this year versus last year. But you could also see that with the Saudi show, where you could say, well, if the Saudi money is so many millions of dollars per year, but it's contingent on doing X, Y, and Z, then perhaps it's going to be connected to X, Y, and Z, and therefore the money that's coming in would be connected to the show. So even the amount of money that we see them get for the Greatest Royal Rumble may or may not represent how much money they've been promised for 2018. Because in my mind, if they're doing other things in Saudi Arabia in 2018, then the money should be delayed until the time that they do those other events.
Well, I would strongly guess that they got a lot of money from Saudi Arabia in Q2. I don't think they're like fronting the money for the Greatest Royal Rumble going and doing the show without any payments from without sufficient payments to cover the costs at the very least.
Absolutely. Just in the past, though, WWE would have booked all the value. Say they got paid for all of 2018 up front. Mm-hmm. They might have booked the whole value in one quarter.
Right.
Now they would possibly break it out throughout the year.
Are they doing another show in Saudi Arabia this year? I don't think so, right?
I am unaware of anything else that they're doing in Saudi Arabia yet. Yeah. But knowing the way that this is playing out, you know, what was the lead time between Greatest Royal Rumble announcement and Greatest Royal Rumble implementation? A month?
Yeah, something like that. We went over that recently, yeah, March to April.
Yeah. So maybe the big announcement from Stephanie McMahon, the historic announcement, is not only are they doing a women's pay-per-view.
They're going to do it in Saudi Arabia.
That would shut us up pretty good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would definitely shut us all up. I would kowtow to WWE if they did that. I would say, you guys win. You win this round of the culture wars. So that will be one of the biggest things that, you know, if you're a writer and you're trying to create your narrative getting ready for Thursday, the first one is going to be WrestleMania attendance. And take it from me, take it from Brandon. I've covered these for years and years. If you want to talk about what sells, what gets people excited to talk about, you know, like what's going to get retweets, WrestleMania attendance, people love that. Mm-hmm. Vince quotes, anytime Vince McMahon says anything on a Q&A, especially if it can be taken out of context.
Yes.
Especially if it can be something like, Roman is the best champion we've ever had. Or
he never says anything like that. But
Brock is an asset like no other. You know,
he never says anything like that either. But yeah,
but or swing and a miss. You know, whatever it's going to be, some mm-hmm. Vince thing.
Or if he has to, you know what got it some views was like, Paul. What are their names again? He's referring to like the new Middle Eastern talent that they signed.
Shadeo Basalo or whatever her name was, which was hilarious because not only did Vince not know her name, WWE didn't know her name. They misspelled her name on their own slide at the Business Partner Summit this year. Mm. I was probably the only one that caught that, but yeah, they misspelled her own name. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's one is any Vince quote you can make, that's going to get you a lot of retweets. WrestleMania attendance helps. Mm-hmm. Anything about Saudi Arabia is obviously going to get you a lot of attention. NXT attendance, that's always interesting to kind of compare quarter over quarter, mm-hmm. is that we do get NXT attendance usually. Mm-hmm. So that's another element that kind of gets people excited. For me, I get excited about the lawsuit update is that they always try to put in some, you know, real small comments about what is happening in the lawsuits. For the life of me, I can't figure out what's happening in the CTE lawsuit right now. It appears effectively dead, but for whatever reason, it has not closed. And I can't tell if that's because they're going to have to refile for a third time or if like it's just some small regulatory thing about them trying to get the sanctions on Kairos finished. Well, and that's why it's still open. It's really unclear to me what's happening in that lawsuit. So I'm hoping for a little bit of clarity from this filing. I'll be curious if they disclose the fact that Titus O'Neil's lawsuit is part of, you know, that they've been named in that, or if they disclose the fact that Randy Orton's tattoo artist is suing them, right. Or if they talk about the fact that they're suing a company called Transworld Television over not paying them TV fees.
Well, just reach out to K&L Gates and just say, hey, what's the deal?
I might do that. I'm willing to wait till Thursday. I've been looking to see what the next kind of set of filings is. I've also reached out to Mr. Kairos and we've, you know, a couple times changed emails of, oh, I'm too busy to talk right now. Call me on this date. And the two of us have not connected yet. Hmm. But someday I might, in fact, have an update for us all about what's happening in that lawsuit. Other things that are going to be in WWE Q2, mm-hmm. sometimes – you know, the Q&A session is going to give us some idea about what's going on in India and the UK, see if they change any of the timelines for when they mention the next set of deals, mm-hmm. See if anybody asks them the big questions about ROH, the MSG being run by Ring of Honor, New Japan.
Yeah.
Asks them any big questions about the state of their dividend, probably about when are they going to double their dividend. Mm-hmm. See if BTIG continues to write their investor fan fiction about, you know, rebuying the stock.
How likely do you think it is someone actually asks about Madison Square Garden? How likely, I guess the secondary question there is, how likely do you think the analysts are aware that that story is happening? I think a few of them might be aware of it, but I would still put the likelihood of the question being asked pretty low. Because
normally I would say yes. The yeah. only exception to that is the fact that it was a lot of the business journals that was actually breaking a lot of that news.
That's true.
And so there is something to be said for the fact that, A, it's New York, and so it's going to resonate a lot more in New York.
And that's probably where a lot of those analysts actually are calling from, right? A lot of those analysts are in New York. Maybe all of them.
A lot of the investment bankers are for sure. And the fact it's Sinclair and they're all in the news right now, right? You know, the FCC, it's the biggest merger in the media thing outside of the Time Warner deal going on. Mm-hmm. So
what questions should they be asking? Those? Any others?
Well, like you and I talked about, is the state of WWE popularity. One element of that is the attendance number. And I do think that you could begin asking more and more questions to WWE to say, in light of your new TV rights fees, what is the balance between live events, international growth, WWE network, and television focus? How do you balance those priorities? And at what point would we maybe see a pullback on number of live events per year to make sure your talent is in the best shape for television? when are you going to relaunch your WWE Network and create a tiered network? What additional information can you give us about the digital rights landscape of what you're trying to do here? Are we going to see a single deal, or are we going to see a dual deal in the rest of the world? What's the deal with global localization?
Yeah.
For NXT, what's the timeline on that? What the heck is happening with the WWE UK? You know, what's really going on there? You made us lots of promises about what we'd see from China and India. Talk about those marketplaces. Make it clear to us what's going on there. What are you doing about star creation? Who's big for you guys right now? You know, I always think that this people should be asking them about stars, even though you're never going to get an answer from a George or a Michelle. Mm-hmm. Because I want them to be in that position to start thinking, oh my God, I should actually understand what the star creation vehicle is for this company.
George and Michelle, that is people who are not deeply involved in the creative process, like George Barrios and Michelle Wilson, who are co-presidents of WWE. They should be asked those questions to make it aware to them that this is something that investors and analysts care about or should care about. I don't know if they do, but they should. Yeah.
You know, I think this MSG show is a perfectly good question to ask. It's just to say, you know, you guys have run the same place for 58 years.
Mm-hmm.
Your competitors?
They have no competitors. Their competitors are Disney.
These upstarts from Japan are going to be running a show in Madison Square Garden on WrestleMania weekend? How did that happen?
Is my son Shane involved in that in Japan?
I would always go back to, you know, and just the weird reports, things we've heard, the rumors. Hey, I heard you're going to put NXT on Fox. Is that true?
FS1, yeah. That's a rumor.
I heard 205 Live is coming to Fox. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
I heard ITV is trying to launch in the UK. Are you guys stopping that? You know, whatever it is, there's lots of questions like that. But then a lot of it is going to go back towards how much are you investing in the company? What does your OIBDA for 2020 look like? Can you give us more breakout on the domestic rights here and break out, you know, specifically how much when we look at those charts there, how much is Canada? How much is South Africa? Why don't you give us this detail?
By the way,
go back to the fundamentals. Talk to us about your idea to give WrestleMania free every year.
Yeah,
you told us you'd give us some detail about how that experiment worked out. What can you tell us about that now?
By the way, the timing of this expected Stephanie McMahon announcement that she's going to make on Raw that's going to be historic. Probably not coincidental that this is happening the week of a quarterly report, right? If it turns out to be as rumored that the WWE is doing all women's pay-per-view, I
guarantee Michelle Wilson will bring it up if it is.
Yeah. And it'll be hyped in the report. It'll be hyped. There'll be a press release on corporate.w.com about it if that's what the news is.
I bet you 10-1 that we'll get a Hogan question before we'll get an MSG question.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that we'll get a Hogan question than an MSG question, but I think the MSG question is a bigger question.
Well, I think the Hogan question does have a strong argument there to say, what are you as a corporation doing in bringing this kind of thing person back in the fold?
Yeah.
How do you deal with the fact that your wrestlers, you know, do you really feel like you asked them their opinions, or did you just kind of host this on them? And here's the larger one. And I think it was Alfred, I'm going to butcher his last name.
Yeah. From Forbes.
Kawona, who writes for Forbes.
Yeah.
He made a great point where he's like, where is any diversity of leadership in WWE?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barrios is Cuban American,
mm-hmm.
and of course Michelle Wilson and Stephanie McMahon and previously Linda McMahon and Donna Goldsmith and others has been female leadership, but there has been very little leadership outside of white males for the most part in WWE, and you know there is a time when you could make a strong argument of maybe they're not doing enough to look at diversity in their ranks as they become an international corporation and they're making decisions like, when do you bring back Hulk Hogan?
Yeah, I think they obviously make token efforts for diversity when it comes to the Hall of Fame, when it comes to announced teams, but of positions of real power, like it's a lot of white men. There's some women, obviously, as you said, Michelle Wilson, Stephanie McMahon, but like think about who the big producers are, Paul Levesque, Brian James, Michael Hayes,
Well, I mean, Devon is a producer, technically.
Devon's an agent now, yep.
But it's something that is sensitive, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's just one that, you know, if you look at the board of directors, I think there might be one person on their board of directors who might be Asian American. I'm not certain about that.
I think you're right.
But, you know, it's again, I think WWE, for all the lip service it pays, it probably could do better with thinking more about how they could be a 21st century corporation that also looks more at diversity. Because I think if they want to be a truly international corporation, it says a lot about their decisions on both, you know, dealing with the Saudi government, but other kind of things, dealing with Hulk Hogan, dealing with other things, to say, what are you doing to look at more mindsets and more voices than just the small group that you're used to of yes men? And of course, in professional wrestling, it's riddled with that, you know, the same small group of people holding power and agreeing with each other over the years.
As Vince McMahon said in an interview once, and I think about 2004, he would hope that the people around him and his family and so forth would tell him that he's out of touch if he ever became out of touch. Lorraine Ong, I'm guessing, is Asian American.
She was the one that was in my head when I said that.
Yeah.
And yes, I see. Yep, that is accurate.
Yeah.
And then the other piece of it is
on the board of directors. What's her actual job?
She's one of the outside member board of directors. Yeah. She's one of the members of the board of directors that does not work directly for WWE, which means she's on a lot of the committees then that is also trying to decide things that would be conflicts of interest for WWE, like compensation.
Her LinkedIn says she is the principal of Lorraine Ong Media and Management Consulting.
Yeah, she was a former
Global Media Strategy
President.
Yep. In the National Geographic Channel.
And also just, you know, you mentioned Michael Hayes. I mean, think about the fact that Bobby Lashley's back with this company.
Yep.
If you go back in history and kind of trace through the what happened with Bobby Lashley story, it is not a pretty story.
What did happen?
Basically, he got injured. While he was injured, there seemed to be a quiet release, and it more or less came out that it sounded like there was some comments made by Michael Hayes that Lashley did not appreciate, and he felt that he was kind of in a hostile environment. That my understanding of kind of what appears to have happened was that
Bobby Lashley is 42. How about that? Okay.
Cause he left very quietly, very quickly. He had been injured for a little while, and he was also very disappointed with how Crystal, who at the time was his girlfriend, was being treated.
So I'm just reading from Wikipedia for what it's worth. July, this is 2008, July 30th episode of Raw. Lashley was defeated by Mr. Kennedy during the match. He was injured. Lashley took some time off for surgery for the legitimate injury he suffered. After a 6-month hiatus, WWE announced that Lashley was released from his WWE contract on February 4th, 2008.
Yeah, and I remember I went back on, I think, the Observer board, and I went through all the observers at the time to try to find, you know, the kind of like what happened. You know, what was the story behind this? Because I remember there being something. I'm very curious. I'm just trying to, like, as I'm talking to you here. Yeah. See if I
think Mark Henry had some issues with Michael Hayes too, didn't he?
Yes. I think they were very much aligned in terms of where they were getting frustrated and the belief that Michael Hayes was using terms that were very offensive at the time. Not at the time, but very offensive to those wrestlers. And that it was such that I believe Bobby Lashley, who WWE did not want to release because Vince McMahon was very high on Bobby Lashley, you know, kind of was given an out as opposed to, you know, other things. Like, here we go. I'm pulling up the quotes from the Observer at the time. Booker laughed when he was asked about Michael Hayes and the racism in a conference call. He says, Hayes thinks he's black. I don't look at Michael as a racist myself, he said. I've heard him use the N-word before. He's one of the people who can use the word around me because I know there's no malice behind it. So one thing is I think it was around that Michael Hayes using the N-word. Yeah. And then in February 2008, the Figure Four posted something. And at the time, it just said, Bobby Lashley's finished with WWE. We don't know the entire story yet because it's very complex. He has opted out of talking about it. And Dave in The Observer basically talks about how Lashley was Vince McMahon's pet project. And, you know, of course, he was in the big angle with Donald Trump. And he said, so among the reasons believed included the mania payoff, not wanting to work in a company that tolerated the behavior of Michael Hayes, the SmackDown lead writer. Apparently, this stemmed from something Hayes said or was related to the treatment of Crystal Marshall, Lashley's girlfriend, and her subsequent firing. Although Marshall had tremendous heat with a lot of people, hardly limited to Hayes, she was let go. Lashley and the WWE officially parted ways on 2-4 after a week where the company made a strong effort to get him back. Nobody's really talking about it. I don't really know the terms of his release. He earned in excess of $1 million last year, and there was mostly a vibe that he was very lucky to be put in such a position so early in his career and that he was making a mistake in walking out. But the biggest part of this being that it seemed very much that Lashley made the choice to walk away, not that WWE didn't want him there.
It looks like in 2008, Bobby Lashley made an official statement on his official website. I can't go into details of this now, but like I said before, sometimes people will hate you personally and try to destroy you, which has happened here. Evil has prevailed. However, like I said before, you continue your struggle. Doors will open around these people. Very cryptic. Okay.
But I just brought it up. It just shows you full circle how things happen. Mm. And at the same time, you know that fundamentally, there's a lot of questions about is WWE as an organization really changing its management and its understanding of these issues, or are they just continuing to kind of put people back in positions and just kind of shake their head and say, well, that's how they are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would always go back to the Hulk story, I think, is indicative of the larger culture in WWE, which is saying it's very top. It's driven by these singular visions. And they can create very toxic culture workplaces.
Mm-hmm. And hey, Michael Hayes grew up in the American South.
He did. We talked about the MSG show on our premium show the last 2 weeks on the free show for the free show listeners on this one. They've been hearing our history of WWE 2018, where we kind of broke down all the huge things that happened this year. You know, Dave Lagana on our premium show, our patron show, did a great interview with us, and he talked about how 2018 is going to go in the history books as one of the most important years ever for WWE. And he's accurate in saying that, because when you think about everything from the Saudi Arabia to the, you know, what you call the Snickers doctrine, yeah, to the TV money, this was a banner year for WWE, a transformative year for them.
Yeah, I almost feel like every year of the last few years has been kind of like that, right? And starting with 2014, I guess.
I think since the network has been announced, yeah, it has been a years of transformation. Though I think the touch point this year is huge, just because the TV deals are such a giant step up.
Yeah, I think 2017 was a pretty transformative year, at least in terms of talent, because that's the what did Vince call it in 1984? The turbulent year of 2017. Where they started up the UK tournament and the Mae Young Classic, that was 2017. And the Cruiserweight Classic was in 2016, and in 2016 they signed Nakamura, and there's just things like this that, you know, we never would have expected. And
Rousey and Brock and everything else that's going on right now too.
Yeah, I think that a big change in talent philosophy happened in late 2014. When they started signing Finn Balor, Hideo Itami, and Kevin Owens. So it's been a very transformative last 5 years or so, and I think the future is going to be even more transformative, just if nothing else.
The decision to let Daniel Bryan come back and wrestle for them.
Yeah, true. I think things are going to be even more transformative, if for no other reason, just because, you know, this is my philosophy, is that media is going to become even more diverse and fragmented, and going to allow, you know, give opportunities to people who had less power in the past.
Though it always strikes me as fascinating that the network, which in many ways you would have thought would be the biggest driver of change for this company, in some ways is overshadowed now by the TV deals, where mm-hmm. the network stagnates out and you have to kind of revitalize it in a totally different way. Whereas TV, something that's been an engine for them since 1999, with some gaps in the middle there, but is what's actually going to kind of propel them into the next stratosphere it's not the network announcement. It's the television deals.
Yeah,
the network. I don't think you can ever separate one from the other and say, well, they would have been on the exactly same course if they had never given up pay-per-view and they never done this. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm just mean it's interesting because I think in 2014 or 2015, I would have been talking about how the network is going to be generating all their money and all their world. And in the end, it's still TV.
Yeah, the network in the end, I think, has reduced the volatility of their business. You know,
it did.
They're certainly not in a position anymore where you never know what's this paper. How's this pay-per-view going to perform? How's that pay-per-view going to perform? It's a very predictable. It's a very predictable service in terms of the subscribers. They get it within 2% every quarter, and they probably will this quarter, which we'll find out on Thursday. They're very good at predicting, you know, how many subscribers they're going to gain and lose, and what their number is going to be every quarter.
Which is ironic in the sense that from a wrestler standpoint, you're at such a disadvantage, right? Because you're in a model where it's about the live gate houses mm-hmm. and pay-per-view buys. And now this industry is about TV rights and WWE Network numbers. And you don't really have a say in either of those.
You have an effect, but it's like a super long-term effect. It's not like...
But I meant more your paycheck.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just mean that's amazing in a way that, like, you know, we've gone – wrestlers are stuck with they're getting paid on houses and they're getting paid on – probably no longer, but they used to get paid on the number of pay-per-view buys. And the things that are actually driving the business for them now is this network stability and their enormous TV deals. And the wrestlers aren't getting 1% of that.
Mm-hmm. They're probably still being paid based on what the non-televised – live events are doing, though, right? They're probably getting paid based on tickets sold.
Based on the very temperamental formula that's used for that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably a lot of subjectivity involved in to exactly. determine the hierarchy there. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about this MSG show. We haven't talked about it so far on the free show. Ring of Honor is, in fact, going to be running their big show on the WrestleMania weekend. And in the end, WWE... not able to stop Madison Square Garden from going through with the agreement. Sounds like basically Madison Square Garden got afraid of having a lawsuit over it. Mm-hmm. And WWE definitely didn't want to be in the middle of that. They weren't a hill to die on. Mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't look great in court to say, well, we want to keep somebody else happy. So we decided to deny negotiations that we had already done in good faith with somebody else because we were just trying to get WWE to, you know, my belief is MSG was secretly trying to get WWE to pony up. And in the end, WWE didn't take the bait, even though they were displeased
up,
with them.
To pony up what? What do you mean by that?
Do some dates in their arena.
Do more Madison Square Garden shows run by WWE.
Yeah, that's my belief, is that Madison Square Garden partially wanted to get WWE to kind of play ball more. Mm-hmm. In addition, I think they wanted to do this deal, but I'm sure WWE tried to intimidate them. And nor do I think that, you know, Madison Square Garden was ever super gung-ho about the idea of making WWE angry.
Mm-hmm. The Observer had some news out about this week, basically saying that Ring of Honor or Sinclair made a legal threat to Madison Square Garden, and Madison Square Garden was unwilling to take the legal hit for WWE. The Observer reported, as soon as the announcement was made, WWE called MSG and attempted to block the booking. MSG pulled the date from Ring of Honor, and Sinclair immediately threatened a lawsuit. So, in the long run, it was important for Sinclair and WWE to not be at odds, and Dave gets into this whole thing about how, you know, Sinclair could have pulled SmackDown from the Fox Sinclair affiliates, and that could have really affected WWE in terms of ratings.
Which is a garbage argument. Mm-hmm. When does SmackDown go to Fox?
October 2019.
When is this show?
April 6th, 2019.
So are you really trying to tell me that 6 months after this show not happening, Sinclair would shoot themselves in the foot?
It seems less likely because of the time
difference
there. It
seems idiotically – I can understand if you're talking about 2020. Where it's the middle of the run. Why would people believe that Sinclair in their Fox-controlled stations, knowing that they're going to be basically pissing off their local affiliates, they're going to be pissing off their lead-in for the news, they're going to be screwing with the local ads, they're going to screw with everything because of one show that their rinky-dink wrestling organization does. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when you put wrestling in the center of your diagram and you build your vision of the world around it, rather than put Sinclair, the mega corporation that they are, in the middle of your diagram, and then you put where Ring of Honor is on the outer moon of Saturn.
Is that where Ring of Honor headquarters are located?
I just find it to be it's one of these fantasy these financial fantasy booking stories in my mind. Well,
Dave really seems to believe that this is what happened, and it's the key leverage over WWE.
6 months after the show would not have happened that they would be trying to punish them. Mm-hmm. That's absurd. Fox Sports would have a hissy fit if they did that.
Mm-hmm. And it would not be worth the trouble that it would cause, you think?
What else would they put on? How would they make it better for themselves? It's a self-defeating thing to get angry, and that's why you want your that's why the sections of your corporation you want to have independence. Now, do I think Sinclair is dumb enough to do this? Do I think they're stubborn enough to do this? Yes. Yeah. Do I think it's going to happen? No. Especially because, like I say, it's 6 months later.
Yeah.
If it was in the middle of when they were on television, you could at least fathom it. But the idea that you'd be holding a grudge that much longer. Think about the times WWE's gone to war with people. Like when they went to war with Dish TV or DirecTV over pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. Or when TV stations have been threatened to be kicked off, you know, like a big cable operator. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, oh, you know, if we lose this channel, then you won't be able to watch such and such. Those fights usually last a week, a month, 2 months. They don't last 6 months. Mm-hmm. So I just find this to be one of these, like, everybody thinks it takes it really seriously. And I want to just take everybody around and say, wait a second. Do you really think the head of Sinclair gives a crap about this?
Chris Ripley.
I mean, I guess Chris Ripley cares enough, but I don't think he cares enough to shoot himself in the foot in that way.
Yeah. To cause all those problems for Fox Sports.
That's my belief. But I'm just calling it like I see it. But I think this is one that people have just tried to create this elaborate doomsday scenario.
In all likelihood, somebody's probably telling this to Dave, and you know, he believes this is what's going on.
Yeah, but again, it puts wrestling in the center of the Sinclair universe in such a way that they're willing to kill themselves to die on a hill for wrestling. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that's true.
Mm-hmm. All in 2 live on Fox in 2019, maybe on a weekly basis.
But putting everything in perspective. What a coup de grace from ROH and New Japan, because I mean, in 60 years, was there ever a better time that you could run Madison Square Garden and get away with it?
Yeah. WrestleMania weekend. Is it going to sell out? And what if it does sell out? Tickets go on sale August 8th for Honor Club members. That's their OTT service. And then to the public 2 days later on August 10th. How fast is this going to sell out? Is it going to sell out? I did a poll very informally on Twitter, 163 respondents, 64% of them said yes, this is going to sell out. 36% say no.
I'm shocked that many people don't think it's going to sell out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's because there's Dave mentions in the Observer that there's talent like Kenny Omega and Young Bucks that were not announced. And so I agree those are valuable talent, and that if you don't have them on, there's a small degree of people that are going to say, hey, I don't want to go to that show. Mm-hmm. But I honestly think if it's WrestleMania weekend and it's MSG, you have such a huge base of people to draw from. And the fact that even NXT is not the level of WWE, but it's so how quaint this is. You know, do I think it's going to sell out next year if they ran it 2 years in a row? No. But do I think it could sell out once in the vision of All In, where you have all the factors going for you and you're announcing it 6 months in advance? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I think it'll sell out unless they price the tickets wrong.
Yeah. I think if All In sold out as fast as it did, this is going to sell out. The biggest draw here is not even any one star, although they are factors in this. I think the biggest draw here is wrestling history. And granted, the stars are the ones who are you know, booing this wrestling history being able to happen. But
I do think you'd need New Japan and Ring of Honor. I do not think Ring of Honor by itself is strong enough to sell the show out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what All In is as well, right? All In is going to have Okada on it. I think it's going to – is it going to have Tanahashi on it? Do you recall?
I don't recall one way or the other. Yeah,
but it's going to have New Japan talent on it. It's going to have All In is going to have Cody, Omega, the Young Bucks on it. Maybe this Madison Square Garden will have them on it. We'll see.
Yeah, so in my mind, it's the right time to strike. It's the right way. It I would actually say this speaks a lot about Harold May. Is I think Harold May is aggressive about his desire to make an impact in the U.S. and deals like this are the way things are going to move quickly, mm-hmm. you know, and getting that kind of support makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely going to sell out. I could be proven very, very wrong because maybe the New York marketplace is so expensive or so difficult to move tickets in or there's so much secondary scalping or whatever. But yeah, I don't fathom how WrestleMania weekend it can't. I mean, you and I went to the WrestleCon show and that had no problem drawing a couple thousand people. And that wasn't even like remotely the everything that this show would
about 1800, I think. I either counted or figured, estimated somehow. Yeah. And that was Kenny Omega in a tag match against opponents that weren't even advertised.
Yeah. Chucky T and a guy in a grass suit.
Yeah. It ended up being our friend and Flat Earth champion. Flip Gordon. And I can remember he did the shooting star that got no reaction. And
I thought that was the Will Ospreay match.
No.
Okay.
No.
See? Got all mixed up. Yeah. But we're talking about Sinclair and Tribune. And a lot of news coming out this week about the Sinclair Tribune deal and how it's falling apart. How even in this very conservative FCC – I say conservative in some ways laissez-faire FCC environment we're in.
Before we jump to Sinclair – August – so tickets go on sale to the public for this MSG show on August 10th. August 11th, is the show sold out or not?
No.
No. It's going to take some time to sell out, you think?
I think it's going to take a few weeks, yeah. I think 15,000 tickets is a lot of tickets.
Mm-hmm. It's a few thousand more than All In, which sold out
in
minutes.
Yeah, but ticket prices are going to be twice as high.
Are they? Have you seen ticket prices yet? Are those public?
No, but I'm just saying what I've learned from two things. Number one, what we learned from All In is that they price their tickets way too low.
Yeah.
The secondary market was seven times the price that a lot of these tickets were going for. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two, Madison Square Garden costs a buttload of money to run. It's arguably the most expensive arena in the United States to run. Yeah.
Something like $400,000 probably just to get the venue.
Yeah. So it's an incredibly expensive place. And so the amount of money that All In made as a whole would probably not even – the live gate number might not even cover what it will cost to run Madison Square Garden.
Well, didn't we or someone from Voices of Wrestling estimate what the gate was based on all the ticket prices, and it's something like $800,000 for All In?
I thought it was close to $500,000. Was it $800,000?
I don't know. I can try to find it.
Yeah. But either way, my point is – I just don't believe you can make it a profitable show unless you're almost ticket prices at least 2x. Yeah. And it's the New York marketplace. I think it's going to sell for a hell of a lot more than the Chicago marketplace outside of Chicago marketplace. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's going to be a slower process. I also think that, you know, there's going to be that element where you have to make that decision. Do I want to buy the ticket for MSG or do I want to buy the ticket for NXT? And then over time here, if NXT sells out or if this sells out, maybe it will impact the way the other show runs. Mm-hmm. And I just think just like WrestleMania doesn't sell out in a day. So, you know, it just takes time for people to make those decisions these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, WrestleMania is – they put on, you know, at least 50,000 tickets to the open market.
They do. They do. You're right. So hard for me to say. I'm not an expert on ticket sales. But it just seems like to me it will get there. It won't get there in 2 days. Mm-hmm. End of August, I'd be shocked. If they did that, that's a phenomenal success. Personally, I think they don't sell it out till the end of October or maybe even not until 2019.
Well, we'll be watching on Ticketmaster or whatever ticket outlet gives us that precious venue map. I'm sure Lavi will be watching closely as well.
Exactly. But as I was saying, the Sinclair Tribune deal is falling apart. There was the Variety article, Sinclair revises divestiture plan to save Tribune merger, denies misleading FCC. The Gizmodo article, very critical of Ajit Pai, the FCC chairman. And it says why the Sinclair deal might be too slimy for Ajit Pai's FCC, with the kind of implied thing here of like they're willing to do anything and they're not even willing to do this. An FCC letter, which you can click on and read if you're a subscriber to WrestleNomics and you want to read our notes. I have clicks here. And basically it came down to there was concerns about the Chicago station, WGN, the Dallas station, KDAF, the Houston station, KIAH. And FCC unanimously decided to send the merger to an administrative judge for a hearing, and they said it might not be in the public interest. They were concerned that some of the quote-unquote divestitures where Sinclair said, oh, we'll sell these stations to avoid having too high a percentage in these marketplaces, they were being sold to things like the children of stockholders in Sinclair Corporation. And basically other groups like Newsmax were complaining and saying this is absolutely – a clear example of people just trying to use basically shell ownership to maintain control but pretend it's not directly owned by Sinclair anymore. Mm-hmm. And it appears that they – you know, FCC was so annoyed by this that they basically were saying, no, we're not going to approve the deal. It wasn't one of these like, okay, say you're contrite, change the deal around a little bit. We'll give it a go. At this point, it's looking like it might just be one they give the thumbs down to and they have to completely change. And they had already made some questionable concessions to Sinclair in this setting. Things like allowing them to have greatly a larger marketing share of the marketplaces than would normally be allowed by kind of changing the way that they were counting certain stations and kind of lifting caps. And also some questionable decisions around Chairman Pai's meetings with Sinclair and Sinclair lobbyists and kind of whether or not that was all on the books and was clear and open what was happening there.
And all in gate just short of $500,000, you're right.
Okay. So that was my point, is that if the all in gate is only worth $500,000, the idea that MSG, you know, okay, at all in prices, that would mean they would get maybe $600,000 or $800,000.
Yeah. They'll charge way more for ticket prices. The all in ticket prices were $28 to $153. They're going to charge way more for that. I don't know. Let's say an average ticket.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, let's see if I can find in the Pollstar data. The Pollstar data that I recently came across here, I think it does have Madison Square Garden.
Does it have like the cost of running Madison Square Garden? Is that what you're saying? The expense? No. Okay. Well, then.
No, but I can see what the average gate is. So they're listing. It's okay. Interesting here for the capacity because they have a different capacity number for every show that they ran at the Garden here.
Well, they just may have different configurations, you know.
Yeah. So they have a total of so the data set I'm looking at here has a total of 14 shows. Shows in 2001, 2000, 2008, 2016, 1999. So a lot of different years. But essentially the gross on these shows, one of them is very confusing. Because it implies they did 38,000 people in an arena that holds 19,000, which I don't know if that was because they ran two shows that day or what that's supposed to mean.
What
year? Just seems like a wrong number to me.
What year?
In 2001. Mm. It clearly something's wrong.
Yeah.
When it says they sold out in 2000 at 19,000 and they did a gate of 1.1 million. But again, that was 15 years ago. The most recent year I have with a gate is 2009, when I have them selling 13,000 tickets and only doing 559. So they said lowest tickets were worth $20 and the highest tickets were worth $75. So shockingly low from 2009, but that also might suggest that A, you're making a ton of money on venue merchandise, and B, ticket prices we know have gone way up compared to that in more recent years.
Yeah. Let's do some conservative math. I think this is conservative. Average ticket price for this Ring of Honor New Japan MSG show, let's say $100. That would be about double what the all-in average ticket price is. So let's say $100 average ticket price. Let's say a sellout is only 13,000, not even 15,000. That's still a $1.3 million gate.
Yeah. They have I think Meltzer even wrote, they have a chance to possibly do the first $1 million gate in the United States that's not WWE.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, almost no one else has done that except for UFC. I don't know if Bellator's even done $1 million.
WCW ever have $1 million gate?
Probably did not. ECW? ECW had $1 million losses.
World Championship Wrestling. WCW.
No. I think Dave wrote that even they never did $1 million gate.
Yeah. Like Georgia Dome would probably be the closest.
I would imagine that would be one of the very closest. And, you know, we could go to, I think it's, what is it, prowrestlinghistory.com?
Yeah. That's what I'm typing it in the address bar right now.
Really great spreadsheet. This is one of those good examples of kind of a secret resource. You click on Supercards and Tournaments, scroll your left bar all the way down, and there's a little tab that says Event Info. Click on that, and you'll open up an Excel spreadsheet. In that Excel spreadsheet is a whole bunch of different gate numbers for different companies from around the world. And so if you go to NA Stadium, you can see everything going back to 67, where Fritz versus Konitsky in Arlington, Texas, how they did when they drew 13,000 people. But, you know, the highest gate's over $1 million. Let's see here.
So we think off the top of your head, top of my head anyway, the biggest WCW show, Georgia Dome, Goldberg versus Hogan.
Yeah, it says that it did $930,000. So just shy. And they also did one at the TWA Dome in December 1998. That's in St. Louis. And they did $914,000.
Yeah. There's actually a section in – I'm not looking at the Excel spreadsheet. I'm looking at – if you just go to the WCW section of ProWrestlingHistory.com and you scroll down to stadium/dome shows, you'll get all the stadium/dome shows. Some of them have gate numbers. Some of them don't.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the spreadsheet right now, and there is no WCW gates over $1 million. Some of the first $1 million gates was Austin Rock in 2001 at the Alamo Dome.
Yeah. The finger poke of doom, January 4th, 1999 at the Georgia Dome, $930,000.
Yeah, that's the one they mentioned.
Yeah. So the Hogan Goldberg match, which is also at the Georgia Dome, 41,412 people there, $906,000.
Yeah, so very close. So to the question of did WCW ever do it? No, inflation adjusted, yes.
Yeah, you're right. Inflation adjusted, it would be.
Absolutely. But yeah. I mean, it does say a lot that, you know, from a popularity standpoint, WCW was a hell of a lot more popular than Ring of Honor and New Japan ever was.
Yeah.
You know, so
if we look at inflation calculator, if I can get this up in time to take, let's see, $930,000 in 1999.
Yeah. Be probably, let me guess, $1.38 million today.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3. Calculate. $1.4 million.
Is Mookie a savant or what?
He's just a mathematician.
That really was just a guess from me, but I'm pretty proud of that guess now.
Yeah, and I would say that's a fairly conservative estimate. If they can sell out Madison Square Garden, that's about what they'll draw, I think. I mean, who knows what they'll do for ticket prices? It could be way over that if they sell out.
One of my favorite stats for WCW, December 1998, TWA Dome, 29,000 people. Huh. May 1999, TWA Dome, 20,000 people. May 2000, WCW, TWA Dome, 6,500 people.
Yeah, look at that. St. Louis.
Oh, WCW collapse in 2000 was a thing of amazement.
What happened? We'll do a special Patreon WrestleMomics on WCW someday.
Well, I was going to say, I'm hoping to maybe have the author of the new Nitro book.
You have that Nitro book, yeah.
Yeah, The Secrets of WCW Nitro. Really good book. I've been reading it. A guy named, I think it's Guy Evans is his name. And you can buy it at the definitive book on World Championship Wrestling. It's at WCWNitroBook.com. It's called Nitro, The Incredible Rise and Inevitable Collapse of Ted Turner's WCW. I recommend it. I'm enjoying it. One thing that's really interesting about it is it has lots of quotes from things like Turner executives, where they talk about, you know, the thought of running wrestling and their thoughts about that at the time. And yeah, you expect all the wrestler quotes to be kind of wrestler-fied. So it's, you know, DDP giving his opinion on Eric Bischoff. And it's like you take that as much as you take a grain of salt from any wrestler. But some of the more business executives, you're getting a little bit more straight shooting going on about how they felt about the things at the time. And Guy Evans is a really good writer. And
are those original interviews he did for the book?
I think sourced? So. Oh. I think so.
Cool.
And so, you know, he did exclusive interviews with everyone from Bischoff to Harvey Schiller to Jamie Kellner to Bill Burke. Joe Uva, Kevin Nash, Vince Russo, Bagwell, Sullivan, Neil Pruitt, who is a producer who, you know, does a lot of stuff, a podcast recently, head of public relations for WCW, head of marketing for WCW, you know, people like that, that, yeah, we've heard from the wrestlers, but we haven't heard from a lot of the people who worked behind the scenes. And the stuff we have heard is a lot of times just people rehashing what they read in the Observer at the time.
Yeah.
So I think – and Guy does a really good job of writing what I think is a professional book where it's not – it doesn't feel like you're just like slapdashing interviews into a paragraph, but rather you're writing a story that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about WCW in the future here.
Yeah. Don't drink and tweet.
Yeah, just there was a CNBC article with Stephanie McMahon, and they asked all these people, you know, to give advice about, you know, being these brand leaders. And I actually hated this. I thought this was all garbage, almost every one of these things that these people said. Partially because, you know, I just feel like a lot of times you have people who are in very powerful positions and they talk about how they are right, mm-hmm. and they talk about how that people like them are the right kind of people to be doing their job. Mm-hmm. And what you don't feel a lot of is people saying, here's a hard truth and here's a difficult thing that you have to do, which puts you out of your comfort zone. Like one person's piece of advice was ask yourself, are they fun on a bus when you're hiring them? And part of me is just like, yeah, because I'm sure the most important thing to do is to think about, I'm a frat guy who went to an Ivy League school. How can I get other frat guys who went to Ivy League schools in my business?
Uh-huh.
And so I just find that. And so another person's piece of advice was consumers will have more control of advertising in the future. Personalization has a limit. It needs to be more of an agreement between consumers and advertisers. When you reach a balance, when a consumer decides how and what way they want to be reached in the future. Yeah. And part of me is like, since when has marketers ever given a crap about how consumers actually want to be connected?
And again, this is a CNBC article with Stephanie McMahon, among others, among other inspiring leaders.
One person had like a bizarre thing. It said, this is the time to do something, not just communicate. But their example was when CVS Caremark decided to stop selling cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it was a $2 billion in revenue. Well, first of all, it wasn't that much in profit. You know, those sort of things were being sold at, you know, incredibly thin margins. Second of all, it was probably a huge amount of labor for them to deal with the cigarettes because you had to keep them locked up. You had to have people always taking them out. Mm-hmm. It was probably an item they were worried about theft and other things.
Probably a lot of tax.
Taxes that they had to deal with. And the fact – I mean, I do agree with them. If you're a pharmacy, the fact you sell cigarettes does seem like a contradiction, right? If you're about health and well-being.
Yeah.
But
no, see that is the genius of marketing is that you sell the thing that causes the disease and then you sell the treatment of the disease all in the same store.
So there's part of me that's like, yeah, that is a really interesting thing. But you're thinking this is the time to do something, not just communicate. I don't know. It sounds like you're just coming up with a random example against your kind of random aphorism. Mm-hmm. You know,
but what this is
Chris
Jericho's
self-help book part two.
What did Stephanie say about drinking and tweeting?
Well, don't drink and tweet. She said that the guideline she tells them is don't drink and tweet and just apply that to everyone in general. There's a time and place and everything is captured right now. So in other words, don't improve the way that you act. Don't realize that having hateful, racist, sexist beliefs mm-hmm. is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is
don't get
people
caught.
Are going to catch you.
Don't. That's right. This is the lesson of Hulk Hogan, right? This is, hey, full circle. He didn't know he was being recorded.
So I it just bugs me when it's like that. It's not be a better person.
Right.
I agree. Don't drink and tweet in the sense that like the what's the fear? Well, the fear is you're going to say something stupid. I think you go to the root cause then. What causes you to say things that are stupid? What makes you ignorant? What are we doing as a corporation to encourage you not to be so ignorant? Mm-hmm. Also, what is your relationship with quote unquote your independent contractors that you care so much about what they're writing all the time? If you're also trying to monetize what they write all the time and tell them what to write all the time.
That's right. They're independent. They can do whatever they want. They can leave whenever they want, according to George Berrios.
Yeah. People want brands that reflect their values. You know, there's a thing about being meaningful in their lives. And then they don't start a business, build a brand. Brand, brand, brand. Brand, 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 brand. Of course, it's an ad agency that's telling you build a brand. How about solve a problem? Or be relevant. Everyone's like, I want to be the next Apple. But the reality is we don't necessarily need more brands in this world. What we need is more solutions.
So, what else we got here?
Well, that was the main things for this week, I think.
Yeah.
Just for us to say we're going to be back on Thursday. If you enjoy learning more about WWE results and you want to hear it straight from the source, listen to our show. It's $5. Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to hear all this information. And we're over $500 right now on our Patreon. And we made a deal, said we're over $500. We'll do video. So we're going to do a video review of what's happening with WWE. We'll pull the charts and the graphs and the documents into the vision so that you can actually see what we're talking about when we're talking about it.
Yeah. And all that $5. Stuff on, all that stuff on Thursday is going to be only on the Patreon, right?
That's the idea.
Yeah.
And so you're really missing out if you care about this stuff. And we just did a great 2-week review of WWE with all these quotes about the, you know, conference calls, and we had actual, you know, people saying things. And I think that's the thing that gets missed the most in wrestling, quote unquote, journalism, is that there's so much distortion of information. And so often people aren't actually listening to the conference calls or reading the transcripts, and they're just letting other people kind of decide for them what it means. This week's Wrestling Observer got me all worked up when Dave wrote about Ant-Man and the Warp.
Was it in the Observer or was it in the Daily Update?
Oh, it was in the Observer.
Okay.
And part of me was like, wow, did you ever notice how Dave never screws up the Rocks movies titles?
Hmm. This is in WWE News?
It was in the WWE News, of course, because he wanted to let us know how Skyscraper had underperformed. Uh-huh. Because that's really important WWE News for us all. Mm-hmm. He also wrote about Errol Lucha's GoFundMe.
Yeah?
It's not a GoFundMe.
Oh. What is it?
It's a WeFunder.
Ah.
What's the difference? Everything. GoFundMe is basically a donation. A WeFunder means you're getting shares in the company. Now, do I think Errol Lucha is ever going to give any money on that? No. They got to get over like a $10 million valuation to make that work. Mm-hmm. But my point is it's insulting to call another person's company a GoFundMe.
Well, it's Errol Lucha. It's maybe not the most respectable company anyway, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
But if you're a wrestling journalist,
if you're not
a wrestling journalist, you care about it. About it, it's the fact they're selling shares.
Yeah.
If you're a wrestling commentator, go ahead and make fun of them. Mm-hmm. But if you're a journalist, you care about facts and words and numbers. Mm-hmm.
It's a totally different way of sourcing funds.
Yeah, and they've raised $131,000 off 295 investors, one of which gave $50,000. So they really only raised about $270 a person. But that's still an interesting set, interesting data point. It's still an important movement. Do I think Errol Lucha is a good investment? No. Do I think it's run by competent people? Probably not. Do I think that they've done a terrible job of branding themselves and explaining themselves? No. But I at least care enough to understand that. And explain that they're a WeFunder and that they file SEC documents, mm-hmm. you know, and that it's going to be something we're able to track. And it's probably in some ways more relevant than some random, you know, 10th rate MMA show where you care about getting the names of the guys right.
Yes. Maybe he's supplied with something like a press release to make sure he does get the names right.
something. So yeah, it's Errol Lucha's own fault for being not very good at branding themselves in this, but it's Dave's fault for not taking the time to actually do it right. Yeah. And it shoots Dave's argument that he's a journalist in the foot pretty bad when you don't get called out on the fact that you're making pretty bad typos. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned this because you know what I got suspended from Bleacher Report for once?
You got suspended from Bleacher Report?
I got a serious content violation standard where I was being reviewed and admonished strongly because I referred to Glenn Jacobs with one N versus two N's.
Really? So you and you were as a like an article writer?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Because Glenn Jacobs has two N's and I wrote an article where he had one N.
Hmm.
And I got like – and I also once got in trouble because I referred to I basically referred to the fact that there was like all the drama at the time around Alberto Del Rio leaving the company.
Yeah.
And like it was basically claimed that that wasn't proven, so I couldn't make a reference to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was.
Is that how journalism works? It's not just you know.
I'm just saying that's Bleacher Report journalism, yeah. Which yeah. is like, in my opinion, the lowest level of journalism that you can go against. You know, that's a yes, you're linked from CNN.
Yeah.
You're you know, it's the difference between the non-paid posts on Huffington Post and a journalism. Yeah. So it's just that sort of thing where I just think like details matter enough to actual journalists that they freak out on the fact that I spelled Glenn Jacobs with the wrong number of N's. Yeah. And that's a real story.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's like it's not a GoFundMe. It's a WeFunder. It's not Ant-Man and the Warp. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp. And if you were to say, well, I don't care, that's not relevant to what I'm doing, then I'd say, why is Skyscraper relevant to what we're doing then?
Is
either
anybody,
you care enough to get it right or you don't.
So is it Ant-Man and the Warp or Ant-Man and the Wasp? What is the actual name of this movie?
Which makes more sense to you?
Ant-Man and the Wasp. But Dave yes. did get it wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. So even saying, Dwayne Johnson movies he's getting wrong titles.
No, it's not a Dwayne Johnson movie.
What is it?
It's just another it's the Marvel other movie that's
the other
out
movie
right now.
That's in competition with it. I see. Okay. Is anybody in wrestling a journalist?
Is he?
Is he? I don't or is anybody? Nobody wants to say that they are.
Well, at one time Dave said him. Something really weird where I just remember he's like, "Don't compare me and Wade. What we do is totally different."
How? How is it different?
It was some kind of argument like I'm a journalist, Dave is – or Wade is a commentator or Wade is a newsletter writer or something weird. It was something very bizarre where it was just one of these things where he was trying to make the argument that he goes out and he searches, you know, like a journalist should, and Wade didn't. And it was a really weird snippy comment he made one time. Hmm. But yeah, I don't know. He did report that Casey Collins left the WWE. Casey Collins was the former EVP of Consumer Products. He was part of the board of directors of Tap Out, actually.
Oh. Casey you Collins know? Did a presentation at the most recent Business Partner Summit, didn't he? No.
2017,
actually. He did not do one in 2018.
Yeah, John Brody, I think, took over his presentation this year. But in 2017, he talked all about, you know, how they were doing gaming. He talked about toys and the action figures section. He talked about the fitness thing with at the time, the pivot for Tap Out going to a men's brand to a women's and boys. And he talked about how they opened up Tap Out gyms in New York City, which I should figure out if they ever made any money on that. And he talked about all the retail stuff they were doing, like the Bootio merchandise and the Toys R Us promotional events. So, you know, really good stuff. Mm-hmm. But no, you know, he was a very accomplished guy. I was most surprised. You know where Casey Collins got his start?
No, I don't. Tell me.
He was the director of worldwide licensing and motorsports at WCW.
Oh, really?
He managed WCW's Worldwide Consumer Products Program.
Wow.
Collins, he also used to work at Lucasfilm and other things. So it was just really interesting to me.
Do you know of any other
– He was a very accomplished guy actually. I mean I'm not trying to make belittle or make fun of it.
Do you know of anybody else who like worked with WWE or WCW who – I mean like an executive role. Somebody who ended up as an executive who like worked with WCW in something like an executive role.
There's not many, and that's why I think I was so shocked to see this. I was like, this didn't come from his WWE profile. This came from he happened to speak at some conference, and when I pulled his profile from that, it mentioned he used to work for WCW. Hmm. And I was blown away because I was just like, I can't think of that many people who used to work for WCW who now work for WWE.
Yeah.
I mean, Michelle Wilson famously worked for the XFL.
Yeah, Zane Bresloff worked for both, right?
I mean, Zane Bresloff was a local promoter type guy. Isn't Zane still alive or Zane died?
No, he died in like the early 2000s. Yeah.
But there's another promoter who is now working with Ring of Honor who goes all the way back to
Gary Juster. You know,
Who I'm thinking of. Gary Juster, who has worked for everybody under the sun for wrestling promotions. Uh-huh. But no, for WWE executives, I'm sure there's got to be other people, but I can't think of one of them. And so I just thought that was fascinating. I mean, obviously you have people like Arn Anderson and whatnot who you know, have moved up in the company over the years and held big roles. Johnny Ace, of course, famously was talent relations both at WCW and later at WWE.
Yeah.
Jim Ross. But no, there's not a lot of people that have that WCW corporate side of business and now work for WWE proper that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So, I was very amused when I went on LinkedIn to look up Casey Collins. It said the two of us were linked by one person.
Constantine Kairos.
No. Mr. Dave Meltzer said, Dave, we both Meltzer. Know Dave. Which makes more sense than why Casey Collins' profile does not mention that he's left WWE. But somehow that made it into the Wrestling Observer.
Yeah.
So, again, WrestleNomics, our gig is we talk about the business of wrestling, understanding who the executives are and what their backgrounds are. That's part of it in my mind. So whether it's Chris Bellitti moving from WWE to UFC – or it's Casey Collins leaving WWE and going wherever he's going, you know, those are the people you want to follow in this industry because a lot of them know a lot about what's made this business strong and good over the years. Time for us to do plugs. Mm-hmm. Let me give a plug to Vox, V-O-X. They do this series on Netflix, The Explainer, every week where they cover a different topic. This week they cover cricket. Really? If you ever wanted to understand cricket. It doesn't necessarily help, but it talks at least about how it became popular. And I think it's a really good thing to watch if you're a wrestling fan because there's so many comparisons to cricket that come up in India. And it's really important to understand kind of the media landscape around cricket. And this show will help you understand it a little bit better.
Hmm. Yeah. You and
Brandon,
Casey,
your pick of the week? You've been preparing all week to talk about?
I don't really have any plugs that are not associated with me other than we're going to do coverage Thursday, patreon.com/WrestleNomics of the WQ2 report.
And you're going to wear your polo shirt of the patron saints of professional wrestling. If people want to buy the polo shirt, where do they go?
They can't buy the polo shirt, but
Wait a minute.
If enough people demand, I will get the polo shirt in production. Maybe there'll be a GoFundMe. But for now...
Maybe we'll do a WeFunder. The Polo Shirt Corporation.
They can invest. They maybe. I don't know. We'll have to have a meeting about this with the larger Patron Saint Athletic Commission Committee. But
does Pro Wrestling Tees do polo shirts?
It's a good question. Probably not. But who knows? In the future, we'll have a lot more things than the present does. But
because it sounds like you and I, when we go to Chicago, should take a business meeting with Pro Wrestling Tees and explain to them the need for more polo shirts in wrestling and have the WrestleNomics polo and the Patron Saints of Professional Wrestling polos.
That's right. If you want to appeal to a demographic with higher incomes and education levels, polo shirts. Polo shirts.
I don't know whether that's true, but I know that excellent men like you and I like polo shirts. That's all that matters.
I quit wearing polo shirts to work a while ago, but that's a larger story. But I do have a blue Patron Saint polo shirt. If more people want it, I will look into getting more. I do have regular T-shirts that have the Patron Saint logo on them. You can tweet me or DM me if you want one, and I'll see if I have your size still. You can follow my wrestling school, Grapplers Anonymous, at Grapps Anonymous on every social media platform. GrappsAnonymous.com is the website. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston. We're going to do coverage Thursday. Check it out.
Sounds good. Talk to everyone later. Bye-bye.